This is Kate Harness with 307net Radio, and today I'm joined by author Jean Galliano. Hello, Jean. How are you?
I'm fine this morning. It's a beautiful morning.
It's lovely, and thank you so much for taking some time. So, Jean, I wanted to talk to you. You are a children's author.
Yes.
But you've also been an elementary school teacher.
Yes.
You're a grandfather and a father, and so you have all sorts of different things to do with children in your existence. Tell me, I think many people have read and know your books in this community, and you know my own children. You know, certainly you went into their schools and spent time with them, and they've read your books and so on. But how did you even start writing, and when did you start writing?
I began writing in seventh grade, basically. I had an English teacher. I was having a physical problem, and I wasn't allowed to participate in the sports. And Mrs. Irwin, a sweet little old lady, English teacher, had us write a poem one day, and we were studying poetry. I wrote a poem called Flowers, and it was just two verses, and it was neat because she put it in the school paper, so automatically I became
published.
And from that point on, I kept writing poetry. When I got into high school, one day, I love this story because it's true. I was in class and I was writing a poem while she was teaching. And you know how the teachers float around the room? Well, suddenly I realized, a tap on the shoulder, and I looked up. Let me see that. I handed her the poem. She's looking at it. She looks me right in the eye and she says, I want to see you after school. She pauses and then she says, we're going to get this published in a high school national anthology. Okay. I thought I was in trouble, but I wasn't. So she helped me get some of my first work in national high school anthologies, and my second teacher, Mrs. Rosberg, I can't remember the name of the first one, but Mrs. Rosberg did the same thing for me. So I kept writing poetry, and then when I was off to college, the first couple years, I kept writing, and I had more poetry written. And one of the poems made it into an anthology of 4 years of the best college poetry. So I kept writing. But it wasn't until I started teaching and had children of my own that I started reading lots of kids' books. And as the time went on, they were getting better and better. Illustrations were more beautiful. The stories were more intense. The quality was better. I started inviting authors into the schools, and when I did that, I got to see what they were, just people like myself, but they had a lot of talent and they could relate to children through books. So I read more and more, and then I thought, you know, I can do this. And I thought, yeah, I really can. So I started writing books. I got a diploma in the Children's Institute of, the Institute of Children's Literature, which helped me. I took that class, started writing some more. One of the things I needed to do is I joined the Wyoming Writers because they helped me see that if you wanted to be a writer, you have to treat yourself like one. You know, you need your space. So I had a little place in the house, and my wife, for an anniversary gift, I think it was, she got me a small desk, and we put it in the bedroom, and that's where I began writing. Started sending things in, and that was challenging because at that time it wasn't on the internet, you know, everything was snail mail. I started entering contests that the Wyoming Writers had, and my very first win was for a story, a $45 check, which I still have on the wall. And I got to know these writers, and they were very supportive of me, and I was supportive of them, and they were very kind people. I liked being around them. They were creative, interesting, and they made good friends. Well, I went on to join the Society of Children's Book Writers and Illustrators, where I met, who did I meet there? I can't think of his name. I'm getting nervous. I got to relax. I don't want to get nervous.
Don't be nervous. We're just having a conversation.
I don't know.
It's interesting to hear your story.
Will Hobbs was his name. from, and he wrote stories for young adults, fascinating books, and they're very interesting. And he did all of these things himself up in Alaska, and all the adventures were real, and he put them into stories. We became friends, and he kept encouraging me. And one day I went there, and he said to me, "Gene," he said, "you're right about here. You're almost over the hump. You're getting there." So he was supportive, and that helped. Then I started sending things in and got a few stories published, one about a young boy I had taught in school who was handicapped. And he, his name was Brian Bergstresser, and he's married now and has children. I see him at church. But it was called You'll Be Good for Him. And I wrote this story because when I received him as a teacher, they said, "You will be good for him." It's the other way around. He was good for me. I learned a lot from that young man. So that was in one of those Chicken Soup for the Soul books. Then I had some poems put in papers. I wrote a couple of prayers that were published. And finally, one day, I got this in the mail that they were looking for someone to write an ABC book for the state of Wyoming. So I sent a sample in and everything, and I got it. And that's mm-hmm. how C is for Cowboy mm-hmm. came into being. And once that took off, and then it became a book that went all over the state. It's still today sells very
so
well.
You describe starting to write as a child. Have mm-hmm. you always written exclusively for children?
No, I write, as you know from my references, I'm the Wyoming Poet Laureate, and mm-hmm. I've written adult poetry for a long time. The last two books were really good. They were hardcover with beautiful pictures in it, and I just signed another contract for another book that'll be coming out probably before Christmas. We'll see. They're never on time.
So tell us, you mentioned Poet Laureate, and that's a wonderful accolade, and congratulations on that.
Thank you.
You have been Poet Laureate for some time.
About 7 years.
Yes. So what does that really mean? I mean, I think that's something that maybe feels a little archaic to some people. They don't know what a Poet Laureate is. What is under your job description as with the title of Poet Laureate for Wyoming?
They never really gave me a description, but I was told that I could be asked to write for special occasions. The two things that I really have done the most of for them are three, really. I have helped judge the Poetry Out Loud contest mm-hmm. for the high school students. I have also read at the Governor's Arts Awards banquet, I think for five times, and it always goes over well, and that's a big thing. There are 350 people there. I remember the first time I walked into that banquet room at the Little America. And I walked in and I looked from one end to the other and I said to my wife, "Oh," and she said, "You wanted to do this."
Mm-hmm.
I got up there. Once I was in front of the audience, I felt comfortable. I read. I made them laugh. I brought a few tears to some people, and I made them think. Mm-hmm. And that was my whole goal as a poet. So then they also started asking me to come to the Wyoming legislature and read to the Senate and the House. Did that for 4 years. And I only missed 1 year because of the pandemic. The pandemic. Yeah, I missed a couple of years there. But driving down there, it was a blizzard, and I couldn't get to it.
So, do you come from a literary family? Were you an avid reader yourself? How did this spark
ignite? Interestingly enough, my family wasn't. Both my parents only made it to eighth grade. But I started reading a lot when I was in about fifth and sixth grade. Walter Farley books, all about horses, and there was just,
Are you an avid reader now?
I am now, yeah. Mm-hmm. And once I started teaching again, I became an avid reader. But in college, you have to read, and then some of the stuff you have to read isn't all that great.
No, so I'm interested in the process of writing. I think every creative person has their own process. They're either very mm-hmm. disciplined and they set aside a certain amount of time a day, or they say, it just came to me. How do these books come to you? Because you write a real diversity of different types of material.
Yeah, I've been able to reach preschool up to college. Mm-hmm. The ideas do just come to me, but I usually carry something in my pocket, which I have today, which we have to talk mm-hmm. about before we're over. They come to me, I'll write down something on a piece of paper, and sometimes I'll stop the car and pull over to the side of the road and write down the thoughts that are coming to my mind. I'm inspired when I walk. I try to walk about 3 miles every five days a week. And when I'm out there walking in nature, things just come to my mind. And so I jot them down. And then some of them, I start doing research on them, and they become books.
And do you work in a linear process? Do you work on multiple books at a time, or are you just doing one and then you come back and you complete and you come back and start the next one? How does it work for you?
Well, originally I used to just do one, but I'm at a point where, like right now, I've got a new poetry book under contract. The poems are written, but I'll have to do editing. I'm working on a middle grade fiction book about the 1912 flood that they had here in Buffalo. I'm into that one, and then I'm going to do a sequel, which I've started for my veggie friends. I'm doing my fruity friends, which mm-hmm. is kind of a fun one too, and I do the artwork on that. So I would have to say that now I work on more than one book at a time.
And are you writing every day?
No, I'm not like some of them. I do not write every day. There are some days and I just don't feel like writing.
Yeah.
And I you know, maybe I'm not feeling well, or I've got a problem I have to deal with. But when I do write, I can usually write for 3 to 4 hours if it's a.
And are you an old-fashioned pen and paper person, or are you now technology?
Sometimes it depends where I'm at. Yeah. And sometimes it's more comfortable for me to just sit down and jot down things. But I'm on the computer as much as I hate technology. That's the best way, because I can take a paragraph and move it, and I can take. Change things out so easily.
And how much do you consider your reader, and how much are you just pouring out something from yourself?
Well, I always consider my reader, especially for the children's stuff. And for the adults, I just pour it out.
It just flows out.
I want it to be my honest thoughts. I guess I have a reputation for being a kind person, and I want to be a kind person. I wanted to get that across to children. And I've always, you know, in schools, I was a teacher who taught kids who had problems. They would give me kids who really had a lot of
home
difficulties.
What grade did you teach?
I taught K through 5.
Mm-hmm.
When I left New York State, I started there and taught 4th grade for 4 years. And it was ridiculous. There was too many students in one classroom. They expected you to switch. And so I had, like, for reading, I would switch out for 45 minutes, and I would have 3rd, 4th, and 5th grade kids. And then I would go back to my 4th grade class. It was just too much, and I didn't feel like I was doing my students any justice. So I left, came out here to Wyoming, where I had 4 students in a one-room school for 4 years. And I loved that. It was like having a family raising them. Those kids are still close to me.
Mm-hmm.
And then I got into the system here at Clear Creek for 2 years, and then I went over to Meadowlark when it opened up, and I think it was 24 years I taught there, and loved every minute of it. I taught mostly second grade and fourth grade there.
So those age groups, I mean, you know, just thinking about the book world for a moment, you know, the kids that are now even in 2nd and 4th grade, you know, you're competing, books are competing with technology, with television and video and phone access. You know, the digital world has taken over. Do you see books still being as relevant?
I think they're still relevant, and there are a lot of kids that really like books. It's still something that you can hold in your hand and pick it up and read it again, and, you know, the artwork in a lot of the books, the elementary ones, are beautiful picture books by well-known artists like Zach Pollan.
Mm-hmm.
He did D and the Mammoth, which represented the state of Wyoming at the National Book Festival in whatever year it was.
So I think of, children's books. I think of it a bit them a bit like the music and then the lyric, mm-hmm. And so on. And you know, the music is almost the words, and the lyric is the other way around. The music is the pictures, and the lyric is the words. Right. Are you thinking of how these things are going to look? Do you have a vision in your mind as you're writing a book that you know is going to be illustrated?
Yes, I generally I do, and usually the artist is the same way. And most of the publishers, when they did any of my picture books, they would put me with somebody that they felt would do me justice, and they have done that. And Zach, Zach Cohen, okay, he loves my work, and he said, "Oh, I wish I could write like you." And I said, "Well, I wish I could paint like you," and so. That was our
I think time. I've heard Elton John and Bernie Taupin say the same thing about each other. You know, Elton John, you know, writes the melodies and so on, and Bernie writes the words. And you know, it comes together in something beautifully much bigger than both of them could produce individually. But this is the first time you have a new book called My Veggie Friends, and this is the first time you've actually done your own illustration, I believe.
Except for when I did my first self-published book. Mm-hmm. It was only one of those, really. And it was the book that Governor Mead chose me for, it was a poetry book, adult, for the Wyoming poet position. I lost my train of thought.
So I was asking you about the illustrations in My Veggie Friends. Was that as hard for you as writing the words, or did you? How did that come together?
Kind of
a slightly new process for you.
Yeah, I basically wrote the poems, and then I did the artwork with them, and it kind of varied. Some of them I did the other way around. It was just how I was feeling. I took wallpaper, construction paper, tissue paper, and put them together. I had an artist in residency in New York Mills, Minnesota, and was stuck in, literally stuck. I couldn't get out. They had a blizzard. I was in my little cabin, and no TV, which was great. I did have a radio, so I had music, and that's where I worked on this book.
And so it's illustration you actually wrote. It's more like collage.
Yeah, it's more like a collage.
Yeah.
You know, what's interesting, most people won't know that. I mean, I wrote this a while back, and I sent it out at a couple places, and they didn't want it. And I thought, well, maybe it's not that good. So I put it away, and I took it out just last year, and I thought, you know, from what I know now over the years, that is a good book, especially with some of the junk I see out there. So I brought it here to the library and asked the librarians what they thought about it. She says, "Why aren't you publishing it?" I said, "Well, I don't know. I was kind of afraid it wasn't any good." She said, "Oh my gosh, it relates so well to kids." So I sent it to my editor, and in a month's time, I had a contract.
Wonderful. And so My Veggie Friends is just published. Is that correct?
Came out in May, I think.
Yes. And so you can, if you're interested in My Veggie Friends, and fairly soon My Fruity Friends, I think you mentioned as well.
Yeah, I've done some of those already.
I'm sure parents will be keen to introduce fruits and vegetables to their
their
children.
The books that people have bought, this book, I sign it, "Remember to always eat your veggies." And the parents say, "Oh, that's perfect," because they don't like such and such. And mm-hmm. Yeah, that's cool.
So what comes next, Gene?
Next is I call it Cloudburst, and that's the story of the flood here in Buffalo, Wyoming in 1912. And it was during a historic time. They were having the big meetings here about making the road go from here up to Yellowstone. And they had that big convention here, and it was 2 days later that the flood hit. That book I'm excited about. And then I have that other book under contract, which is adult poetry, which I think, and again, as you keep writing, things get better, and that poetry, I understand, is a lot better. Not a lot, but it's just increasing. And then I have to finish My Fruity Friends. I've been asked to speak at the Wyoming Library Association conference with four other poets. We're going to do a spot about poetry, and my section is going to be about poetry for kids. So I'm excited about that. That's October 5th in Casper. And so do I want to get back into schools.
So when you're writing, do you mm-hmm. have a purposeful message that, you know, you're taking something from the society and the community and the world that we're living in now? Do you have a purposeful message that you are trying to share with the reader, particularly children?
This one, example.
And so we're looking at The Secret of the Black Widow, which is a republished.
Yes, it's, you know, do not judge people by the way they look. You can't, you know. That's the message in this one. And this one is kind of...
this is Ice Cave Mystery.
Yes, kind of, you know... Don't, again, it's pretty much don't judge the person the way they look up here. This one, Ice Cave Mystery, well, let's go back to this one. This is the first book. Did I mention that already?
Secret of the Black Widow.
Yeah. This is a reprint because teachers wanted it because they used it in their classes. If you're a fourth grade teacher in Wyoming, you teach Wyoming history. And it takes place in 1890, the month that we became a state. So that part is in there. This one, when I was over at the museum here, Jim Gatzel Museum, there's this big poster, and there's these pictures of a man. His name was Wildcat Tom, and he had a pet coyote and a pet wolf. And he was a wolfer for the government. And I thought, when I saw that, someday he's going to be in one of my books. Well, he worked out really well in this book. And he's misjudged, again, by these children. And it's about kindness. There's a bully. It's a bullying situation in actually both of those.
I think for many that's a very relatable experience.
Very relatable. I was bullied from third grade to sixth grade, almost into seventh, but then I left and went to a different school. And it's a terrible thing. You know, I understand it. Fortunately, I didn't take my life because of it, but it made life difficult growing up.
Yeah.
So there's threads of what happened in my life in the books. It's natural. In one of the books that I wrote, there's a young child that dies. My mom lost a baby girl at birth. And you understand that.
Mm-hmm.
Make the parents proud of them.
Yes.
You know, you want to please
extra compensate
for
difficulty things that the parent is going through.
Uh-huh. Hawaii, little Hawaii. I wrote that just because I'd been to Hawaii and I thought, oh, this is neat. You can have some pictures and the kids could relate to. And I find parents that have been or are going to Alaska, Hawaii, like that book.
Yes,
I'm sure. And it just came out, so it's hard to say.
So you have an event coming up at the library.
Yes, Thursday
the 21st of September from 4 till 6 here at the library, and people can come and meet you and see the new books. You've got four new books that you're promoting and want to introduce tomorrow. But you're also going to always, I often see you out and about in our community.
Yes, in the community and outside the community. I've done 185 school visits, and they've always gone well. I've gone back to schools two and three times because, you know, as time goes on, they want me to come back, and that's fine. This signing, it's in competition with something that the Chamber is doing tomorrow night. I didn't know that when it was scheduled.
But there's always something. We live in a vibrant, bright community, and there's always something else happening.
So I thought, in order to get people to come to a book signing, which is difficult these days, I'm going to offer some big prizes, some raffle prizes. You buy a book, you get a ticket, and then you put it in the pot, and we'll see. But here's some of the things that I've got. This was something new I'd heard about. A kettle pizza. It's a deluxe pizza oven conversion kit that you put on top of a grill.
And I know you to be a gourmand, so
Yeah, well, anyways. And then one of my former students, is a silversmith now. Her name is Amy Gonzalez, and she donated a pendant. Of course, we have to have a box of dark chocolate sea salt caramels. Mm-hmm. Got those in there. We got a really generous gift certificate from the breadboard. There's going to be some Alaska salmon. There's going to be a gift certificate from Sagewood. That's a generous one as well. And one that really blew me away is one for Omaha Steaks. It's that's a pretty good deal.
So you can actually get a book and a banquet.
Yeah, it's amazing. The people came through. I mean, you get back what you know. If you're kind to people, they're kind back to you, and I think that shows right in that.
Well, I wish you very well with your event, but before we need to wrap up. But before I let you go, I do need to ask you why you are known as the teacher who dances on the desk.
Okay, I will. But first, I forgot one thing. This is important. I'm going to give back 10% of my sales profit to Friends Feeding Friends. Are you familiar with that group?
I am, and in fact, you can listen to interviews on 307.net Radio with Friends Feeding Friends and what great work they do in this community to help kids, especially who just don't have enough to eat.
And I think that's important. So anyways, that's what I'm excited about, doing, giving back. Yes, I did dance on the desk.
Often?
More than once. It happened one winter. It was cold and dreary, and it was just kind of a down day. And there was a desk that was available.
You're in school at this point.
I'm in school. I'm in class. The children are there. And I jumped up on the desk, and I started to do a little jig. And it just changed the whole atmosphere for the day. Well, as time went on, people got wind of that I was doing it. I mean, I didn't do it every day, but once every now and then I would do that. And my principal said, "How come I never catch you doing that?" And I said, "Well, because I'm good." And he said, "You know, Gene, you've got such a good balance between the kids respect you, you expect a lot out of them," which I did. "But at the same time, you know how to make them feel comfortable and happy and like being in a good home." So I continued. On my birthday every year, Carol Ruby, who was a first grade teacher at the time, I think, she would come in with her class. All the first grade classes would come in. The second grade classes would come into my room on my birthday. And she would play the guitar, and they'd all sing happy birthday, and I'd have to get up on the desk and dance. So I got a little hat out, and I would, a cane, I think, and just did a little jig for them. And that's how it came to be. So as time went on, I became known as the teacher who dances on the desk, and I published a book with poetry about funny things that happened in class. So to this day, I can go to places. Well, when I was teaching in the summertime, someone would come up and say, "Are you the teacher that dances on his desk?" I said, "Yes." "Oh, my kid's going to be in your room." You know, it's just how it all happened. It was just a fun thing.
Well, thank you for explaining that. And Gene Galliano, Wyoming Poet Laureate, thank you so much for spending some time with 307.net Radio and telling us about your wonderful books.
It's been my pleasure.
Thank you very much.